I've said things that I'll regret. It won't be easy to forget. Scars take time to heal before another bitter word gets loose. I was hoping we could call a truce. 'Cause nobody wins, we both lose. Hearts get broken and love gets bruised. When we'll light that same old fuse again and again.
Our next guest on Downtown, a terrific singer and songwriter. First a member of the duo Foster and Lloyd, then great success as a solo artist with his landmark album Del Rio, Texas, 1959. Recently inducted into the Texas Heritage Songwriters Hall of Fame. We're happy to be joined on the program by Radney Foster. I was looking back. I think we talked with you just about 3 years ago. Yeah, right in the middle of, well, in the beginning stages of the whole COVID thing.
Oh, yeah. It was a nutty time. You know, for musicians, I think the biggest thing was sort of, weathering it intact. All my kids moved home, like everybody else. You know, they all lost their jobs, and all of my kids are pursuing music, you know, and the arts. And so, you know, that's, you know, precarious territory to begin with, as I well know. I told them all to go be doctors and lawyers, and they're not paying any attention to me. Apparently, they like this making music and acting, and, you know, all those kinds of things. So what are you going to do? Exactly. But, yeah, I think we did some cool things during COVID by making, you know, lemonade out of lemons kind of every day. I made a jazz instrumental record with my two sons, who are both really proficient in that kind of world and thought process.
And that was great, by the way. I reposted some clips on social media, and that was terrific.
Oh, thanks very much. You know, I learned a lot. You know, I've been a hillbilly, you know, country folk and rock and roll player for a long time. So, you know, every now and then I knew a jazz chord or two, but, you know, they really put me through my paces. And, you know, learning to play a bossa nova correctly is a little harder than you think. Guys, I'm going to need to woodshed on this for a minute or two, you know. So, but it was fun. It was really, really fun. And my wife and I wrote a screenplay based on one of the short stories in my book, and it's in development. And we actually were ready to go, but with the next few steps, but, you know, the strike hit, and, you know, everything's on hold until the strike is
right. Which I was just rereading your book the other night. It's such a wonderful collection for you to see the stars. Which story can you share? Which one it is?
Yeah, it's the story Isabel.
It's
about a young lawyer who has a early midlife crisis and meets another young Latina lawyer from my hometown. And in the film, we cheated a little bit on. I'll just spoiler alert. You know, we made her job, instead of being an attorney like she is in the book, we made her a struggling singer-songwriter so we can add a musical element to the story, because we feel like if we don't do that, then we're just being really stupid. You know, it's really foolish of us. It's like, I do know how to, you know, I may be experimenting with all these other ways of telling stories, but I do know how to write a song, so.
Well, that's wonderful. I look forward to that. By the way, since we've talked about this before with you, Stephen King owns our station, so we should properly introduce you as Radney Foster. You may know him from Mr. Mercedes.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That was such an honor. I always have known that he, first of all, his book on writing should be in every, you know, senior in high school English class, full stop. You know, there's, no matter what it is that you end up having, even if you think, I don't have to really know how to write a story, it's like, well, even an accountant, you know, has to tell a story about how much you owe and how much you don't, and all of that is storytelling. And, it's just the best memoir meets primer on how to write that I've ever read.
Well, you have always said you are a Texas singer-songwriter, and that has to make this recent induction into the Texas Heritage Songwriters Hall of Fame mean so much to you. What I've looked at the inductees through the years, my goodness, it's the history of American music.
Yeah, I was really sort of, you know, elated, of course, but just dumbfounded too, because it's like, I know who's in that club, and it's like, what the hell are they doing letting me eat in the club? You know, you can't help but have some of that, you know, imposter syndrome break out in a sweat, you know, and because Chris Christopherson and Willie Nelson, you know, and Cindy Walker are the reason I write songs. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people in that club that just, you know, had a huge, huge influence on why I do things the way I do them.
Since the last time we talked with you, we had a chance to talk with, I know, one of the people who were a huge influence on you when you were starting out, and that was Randy Goodrum.
Yeah. Randy was a great friend. I mean, he just took me under his wing, you know. I was his kid's camp counselor. And, you know, he heard me, I think the girls were just bugging him. It's like that. He's like, oh, yeah, I just think this boy's cute, whatever. And he actually heard me sing, and he goes, I hear you really sing. I hear you write songs. And that's like, yeah. So I played him a handful, and he really helped me get into some publishers' offices that I would never have gotten into, I don't think. And I still got turned down by a lot of people, but he was super kind and super helpful. And I remember one time, you know, I was trading babysitting, you know, my then fiance and I were, you know, babysitting his kids, you know, in return for him helping me make some acoustic demos of my songs, you know, because that was so much more expensive back then, and he had a home studio. And so, you know, one afternoon when he was spending way too much time on something, I was like, Randy, why are you doing this? You don't, I could see the gold record. You don't need, you know, a break on babysitter money, you know? and he said, I'm doing this because somebody did it for me. And it's going to take you a while because you're really different, but you're going to be really successful. And when you are, you need to remember this, and you need to, you know, give it back. And it was really wise advice, and I never forgot it.
I love the story too about you were in a college band, and a guy came up to you and said, "Hey, I know this guy. He's a producer, and you got to be skeptical when somebody says that to you." But you gave him your number.
Lit. He's a six pack in, man. I mean, you know, this guy. So you know, I gave this guy says, "Yeah, I got a buddy who's producer in Nashville." Sure, doesn't everyone, you know? So I write my name and my phone number in a matchbook like we used to do. You know, it was the Facebook of its time. But that was the payphone down the hall in the, you know, and it was the honor system. You know, you write down a note, call your parents, you know, you tack it on a guy's door. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, I get this guy's name, and it says Brown Bannister, and it has a 615 area code. That's Nashville's area code. Like, that guy might have been not a bit blind. And then I went, wait a second, I know that name. And I remember I scrambled to find a Rolling Stone that had written an article about this new ingenue, Amy Grant, that was taking, you know, pop music by storm, coming from the contemporary Christian world, and every girl, you know, had that record in their dorm, and Dan Brown had produced it. I was like, that's a real guy. <You know? laughs> So I went and played him, you know, a half a dozen songs, and he said, man, you got to have a serious conversation with your mom and dad about doing this for a living. And that was, you know, that was kind of permission for the first time to go, this might not be just a hobby.
Did I read somewhere the first record you ever bought on your own was Linda Ronstadt, Stone Ponies, Different Drum?
Yeah, that was the first 45 I bought. Yeah.
And were you one of those guys that would you'd buy a record, and if it was a 45, you'd read the record label and see who wrote it, who produced it. If it was an album, you'd read the liner notes.
Oh yeah, I'm obsessed with that stuff. I was obsessed with the little names on the 45. You know, the guys that wrote it, right? And it's how you discover. It's like, oh well, you know, John Lennon and Paul McCartney wrote that song together. It's like, oh okay. You know, then you realize Merle Haggard wrote that song. You know, Buck Owens wrote that song. You know, and Buddy Holly wrote that song. You know, and then all of a sudden it's like, who is this Chris Christopherson guy? Wow. You know, I mean, you know, you start learning just from that. And but I remember the first album I bought. My best friend and I rode our bikes down to the toy store, Houghton's toy store. And we were going to go to the Houghton's toy store, and we're going to go to the Walgreens and eat, you know, grilled cheese sandwiches for lunch, and then go to a matinee, the movies, all for, you know, very little money. So we were in there, and we realized that if we buy, you know, we waited until the movies were over, but we went back to buy the record. We had him hold them. But if we pooled our resources, he could get Johnny Cash's Live from San Quentin Prison. Mm. And I could get the Beatles Abbey Road record. And then we could swap, right?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't, yeah. So, which we did, and which was awesome. You know, it lived at one of our houses for, you know, 4 days, and then you'd ride your bike over with that, a couple other records. It's up at your buddy's house.
We're talking with Rodney Foster here on Downtown. You've been celebrating the 30th anniversary of one of the great albums, I think, in country music history, Del Rio, Texas, 1959. I was looking back at my vinyl copy of the album and reading those liner notes and looking at those names, and boy, I had forgotten what an incredible array of talent you assembled with you. Guys like Dan Dugmore, Albert Lee, Glenn Duncan, Randy Scruggs, John Hyatt, Carl Jackson.
Oh yeah, I was really fortunate in that. You know, I'd spent enough time in Nashville that I'd met a lot of those guys, and then my, you know, co-producer on that record was Steve Fischel, who was really starting to make a name for himself as a record producer, but had been, you know, a pedal steel player as a session guy and in the Hot Band with Emmy Lou Harris for 10 years. And, you know, he knew so many, you know, he knew Albert Lee. And the moment he said, Albert Lee's going to be in town, and I think we ought to just invite him to come and play on a couple of songs. Absolutely. Are you kidding? And so it was pretty neat. And, you know, Mary Chapin Carpenter was pretty easy to call. I had been opening a bunch of gigs for her, and I knew that her voice would be perfect on Nobody Wins. And so, you know, things like that. I had never met Danny Dugmore before, and you know, but knew him by reputation, you know, as his pedal steel player. What I didn't know was that his right hand as an acoustic guitar player is as strong as anyone's, and he played the majority of the acoustic guitars on that record, too.
And you worked with another friend of our show, who co-wrote a song and sang with you, the wonderful Kim Ritchie.
She is a delight and a dear, dear, dear friend. As a matter of fact, I think she and my wife are having a girls' afternoon out. They're going to go have a cocktail, wear a lot of pink, and go see the Barbie movie.
Fantastic.
And my wife already saw it with our daughter, and she's like, I got to go back with one of my girlfriends. I was like, all right, you go. But yeah, she's such an amazingly talented human being, and writing songs with her, you know, was a joy. And then having her sing on the record was, you know, just icing on the cake.
Well, it's just such a great album, obviously based so much on your experiences growing up in Del Rio, Texas. How did being in a border town and growing up there shape your songwriting?
You know, I mean, absolutely, there is the Mexican influence on me as a musician, as a guitar player, and as a songwriter. Because there's so many things that I heard, so many styles, and styles of finger picking, styles of music. You know, be it mariachi or wapanga, or there's a lot of traditional, ranchera. You know, there's a lot of traditional styles that I heard all the time growing up. 80% of my friends, Spanish was their first language. I was raised in a bilingual home. It was a deep part of the culture. And my first guitar was a, gut string guitar from Mexico. It couldn't help but seep in. And then the small town aspect of it too was, my dad played guitar and sang, and, he had a bunch of buddies who did the same, and they would sing, they'd get together on a Saturday night and, with barbecue and beer, and everybody brought an instrument, and they'd sing anything from, Amazing Grace to an Elvis song to a Fats Waller song to, to a Patsy Cline song. I mean, if it was, easy to figure out and they could sing along, they're wanting to have some fun playing music.
You've got another album that has an anniversary coming up. I think pretty soon it'll be the 25th anniversary of a phenomenal album, I Love So Much, See What You Want to See.
Yeah. It's like if you start counting those anniversaries, it does get a little weird after a time. But that, that record is a really interesting one for fans in that it got caught in the shutdown of Arista's Austin / Texas division.
Right.
So it didn't sell that many records, because they weren't available. They just quit making them. But then it had this sort of, reimagining and retelling. I think 6 or 7 of the songs on that album have been re-recorded by someone. When all of a sudden, streaming on Apple Music and Spotify happens, then that record sort of had a rebirth. It sort of took off again. Because so many of the songs from that record were hit singles for other people, And so fans were like, oh, wow, wait, this is the holy smokes. This is a great record.
Yeah, and really one of the, was it the first time that the public got to hear Darius Rucker in more of a country music realm?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He sang background vocals on Rain Down Sunday. And I just knew he would, I just thought it would be cool for him to find that, he's a baritone like me. So I knew he was never going to be able to get on top of what I was singing. But I figured that if I had him sing underneath, that it would just have this, and in the right spots, and Daryl Brown's a genius at being able to find whatever harmony. He grew up, who was my co-producer, he grew up, singing and playing in church, so he knows every single note. And so it was great to, between the three of us, sort of coming up with these cool parts for Darius to sing. And at the time he was filming Hootie and the Blowfish.
So many great songs on that album. Two of my favorite compositions of yours, I love Angry Heart and The Lucky Ones.
Oh, thank you so much. Those are, real special songs. I actually, Angry Heart, now and again, will get back in the stack, when I play them live to pull something out from that album that wasn't a hit for someone else. I think I was on both of those songs. I was really thinking about how much I loved, Orbison and Van Morrison, and and was really trying to take my cues from my love of those two particular folks' songwriting, you know, and vocal style, and seeing what I couldn't come up with that would really stretch in a way that I hadn't before. And I think we'll hope.
I went back and listened to another terrific album, and I always think country radio went downhill when I got out. you know, if country radio simply played good music, then songs from This World We Live In would have been all over it. Half of My Mistakes. It's such a great song, and I think I read an interview somewhere where you talked about how that was a great summation of your life in many ways.
Yeah, it was really interesting in that I was writing with a guy named Bobby Houck, who is one of the lead singers. There's two lead singers in the band, of a band from out of South Carolina called the Blue Dogs. They're really great. And, you know, we were writing for, they had just gotten a major label deal, and so we were writing for an album, you know, that they were going to put out. And we'd written a song that the afternoon before, and he said, "Man, I've got an idea for tomorrow." I said, "Okay, what is it?" And he said, I said, "You know, scratch my head over it, you know, overnight. When you know, we'll work on it tomorrow morning." And he said, "My father always quoted Disraeli." That's like the British politician. And he said, "Yeah." I said, "All right, that's different, but lay it on me." And Disraeli had always said that, you know, half of his mistakes were because he was impetuous and the other half because he was reticent. And I thought, okay, those are $3 words, which doesn't really work with country songs, but I get it, you know. And it kind of bugged me so much that I really went down in the basement and worked on that song for a couple hours. And I thought, I came to not finish this thing because I need to make sure Bobby likes where this is headed. And, you know, and so a lot of my personal things, and then, you know, he added his the next morning, and, you know, but that song is really about the highs and lows of life, and that you're, you know, and the realization that, you know, you're gonna make mistakes, and, you know, that's how we learn as human beings. You know, not all of them are as bad as you think they are when you have hindsight. You know, when you look at it 10 years later, and it's like, you know, I learned something from that mistake, and I should have, and that was great.
I think you could have found a way to work in reticent. I've heard you rhyme monosyllabic in a song.
Yeah. Well, I have been known to do that on a song or two. And but the question is not whether you can, shoehorn that in, but whether you should shoehorn that word in there. So that's always my bar. Does that work or does that not work? You know.
I also, one of my favorite lyrics is on that album, too. She bought him a drink, and they discussed the price of sin. What a great story in the kindness of strangers.
Yeah, I mean, that was really kind of born out of I have a very dear college friend who went on to become an Episcopal priest, and she's quite a famous woman these days. I mean, she was a CNN hero, and her name is Becca Stevens. And she's been a huge influence on my life. And she started an organization called Thistle Farms. It's a place called Magdalene House in Nashville, which is really all about, you know, helping trafficked women get off the street, get sobriety, get rid of their, you know, arrest records, and kind of get, you know, back on track. And it's an amazing, amazing place. But just from hearing those stories and then just taking that sense of, you know, John Steinbeck, where, you know, man helps man in the most unusual of circumstances and sometimes in the worst of circumstances, you know, is when we shine at our best. And so I remember writing that song and then playing it for Becca. It's like, does this ring true? She said, "Absolutely," and made several comments, you know, about many of the women that she had worked with and friends that she worked with, and do, you know, and just, you know, just because you're a sex worker doesn't mean you're not a kind-hearted individual.
Mm. I was revisiting Everything I Should Have Said, and a wonderful collaboration with, well, the pride of Old Town Maine right up the road from us, the great Patty Griffin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Patty's been a friend, and I think we've been mutually fans of each other's music for a long, long time. I have a funny story of I played a ranch rodeo, and I don't know if you know what a ranch rodeo is up in Maine, but rather than, like, there's the professional rodeo, which is all, there's a series of events that are, you know, all about daredevilry, you know, a lot of ways. But then, and some of it is about, like, the roping skills stuff is really about what real ranch work is. And a ranch rodeo is all working, you know. So it could be anything from, you know, cutting out cattle to, you know, and it's oftentimes a youth thing. But I was playing this ranch rodeo, and I got a call from her road manager, and she's like, she wants to bring her boyfriend out and to go dancing. He doesn't know how to two-step. She wants to teach him.
And think I know where this is going.
So I'm like, I know who her boyfriend is, you know, but, and I'm like, dude, do we get extra security? So no one's going to recognize him. I'm like, you're kidding me. And so I was like, nah. He said, nah, man, he just fits in. They just think he's an old hippie. I said, well, yeah, wearing cowboy boots, right? And wearing jeans and cowboy boots. And so it was Robert Plant. And I'm standing on stage, and we're playing. And Patty, I thought that she'd get there early and come by. And, you know, she waited till after the show to say, come in and say goodbye, introduce us and stuff. I'm standing there on stage playing, and you know, all the dancers are dancing in a circle, you know, in front of us, like we do in Texas. And you know, Robert Plant and Patty Griffin come by. I was like, oh, okay, sit my hat, you know. But y'all are enjoying yourself.
I love that. Well, I mentioned country music, country radio, and everything is so fragmented these days, and music that would have been played on country radio a generation ago. And I look at your work, people like our friend Roseanne Cash, Patty Griffin, Jason Isbell, Brandi Carlile, I guess would qualify these days as Americana, but there's so much good music out there that isn't getting that radio play.
Yeah, it is you know, there's a level at which you know, the advent of streaming and you know, social media has sort of made it where things can blow up that you might not have seen in the past, or might have had, you know, too many gatekeepers at radio to be able to have a way to get to the public, you know. But there's also the opposite effect. There's so much clutter. There's just so much volume being thrown at you, you know, that it's hard to focus. And there are some really great singer-songwriters out there who are, you know, being easily overlooked and shouldn't be, you know, that I think are phenomenal. I'll toss out some names, you know, right now. It's like, I think in both Americana and in country, I think women are just setting the woods on fire so many ways. And, you know, two of my favorite female country singers are, one is Sonny Sweeney.
Yes.
And the other is Erin Endler. And if you haven't, you know, if your fans out there, Sonny Sweeney is S-U-N-N-Y-S-W-E-E-N-E-Y, Sweeney. And then Erin Enderlin, is E-N-D-E-R, Enderlin, L-I-N-Enderlin. Both just phenomenal singers and songwriters. And you know, Erin had hits that she's written for other folks too that is pretty phenomenal. Like, you know, my favorite Leanne Womack song, I'm Always Your Last Call, is one of their songs.
I know you mentioned you're working on this screenplay. Will there be another collection of short stories at some point?
Yeah, I'm actually working on a second book of short stories, and I'm about halfway through right now. It's taken a little longer just because of touring and a lot of the press stuff with this anniversary. And then I really took some time to produce the Randy Rogers Band's latest record. And I'm working with another Texas singer-songwriter on his record. And I'm in the early stages of that. So, I don't have a huge block of time just to be able to sit down and just write and sort of crank it out. I'm writing prose a couple of days a week, so it's going a little slower than I would like, but it's going, So my editor so far has been very happy with what I've been doing. So.
You'll be up here in the Northeast for some shows August 15th at City Winery in New York City, on the 16th in Woodbridge, New Jersey, Music on Main, and then at Saratoga Springs, New York, on August 18th. I think that's as close to us as you get. 7-hour drive. Maybe I can pull that off.
Yeah, Saratoga's, it's a weekend play. Figure out how to make a weekend in the Catskills out of that deal, So I think we're playing on a Friday night. And I realize that, 7 hours is a bit of a haul. And I'm not sure, don't know that I have anything closer coming up real soon. There's always possibilities for next year. It's not like I haven't played New England in the past,
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. In the meantime, congratulations again on the induction into the Texas Heritage Songwriters Hall of Fame. It is great to talk with you once again, Radney. Appreciate so much you making a little time for us today.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure, Rich. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate it.